Last month, the Connecticut Supreme Court heard oral arguments as to whether to allow a woman to discard a frozen embryo created with her ex-husband's sperm now that the couple has divorced. The now divorced couple signed an agreement to discard a remaining embryo if the two divorced. However, the father indicated that he signed the contract and he would discard the embryo, but now he changed his mind and he would like another couple to adopt the embryo. The mother doesn't want the embryo to be with strangers and she wants the contract upheld. And now the Connecticut Supreme Court is not expected to issue a ruling on the case for at least several months, but it raises the question of the legal status of the frozen embryo. Does it belong to the father? Does it belong to the mother? Does it belong to both, or perhaps neither? Do you look at the frozen embryo as property, or perhaps as some kind of kernel of potential life? The truth is that from a halachic standpoint, there has been much discussion ever since a famous case in Israel in the 1990s. There was a famous case, the Nachmani case. Daniel and Ruthie Nachmani were married for a number of years and they were unable to conceive. Ruthie Nachmani underwent an operation which left her unable to carry a pregnancy, and so the couple needed to use the services of a gestational carrier. They produced embryos from Ruthie's eggs and Daniel's sperm, and the embryos were frozen while the couple searched for a suitable candidate to carry their child. In the meantime, the Nachmani separated and Daniel lived with another woman who had a child with her. But he was still married to Ruthie, who refused to accept a get. She turned to the hospital and requested that they give her the embryos to use them with a gestational carrier, but Daniel did not give his permission. And the question became, number one, there was a contract that was signed. So maybe since the contract was signed, then they have to uphold the rules of the contract, and therefore the Ruthie has every right to give the embryos to use them with a gestational carrier. On the other hand, is Ruthie's right to become a parent more important than Daniel's right not to want to become a parent? And there was court ruling and it was overturned, and another ruling was overturned, went back and forth. The couple finally settled on an agreement that included Ruthie's right to use the frozen embryos, but she released Daniel from any financial responsibility for any future children born from these embryos. And as a result of this case, the law in Israel was determined that embryos cannot be used without the consent of both sides. What does halacha have to say in this case? How can we define who owes the embryos? I'd like to share with you today three different sources in halacha that have been the source of discussion to address this question. The first source in halacha relates to the following question of whether the husband has a unique claim to the embryo based on the halacha, the din of Demei Vlados. The Torah in Shmos, Perech, and Parshas Mishpatim, Perech Chaf Aleph, Pasuk Chaf Beis, tells us that V'chi yinatsu anashim v'nagfu isha hara v'yatsu yiladeha, that essentially if two people are fighting and a pregnant woman is hit or is injured as a result of this fight and there is a miscarriage, so who gets the payment? So the pasuk is very clear that anoshi anesh kasher yashis alav bal ha'isha, that the husband has the right to the payment for the demei vlados. The husband has the right, the restitution must be made towards the husband of the woman who had the miscarriage. And there's a discussion in the Gemara as to why the husband and not the wife has rights to restitution, and there's a debate amongst the Rishonim as to how we rule in this situation. Essentially, there is a debate between the Rambam and Rabbeinu Asher and the Rosh. According to the Rambam, both the husband and the wife are legally entitled to the payments. The Rambam in Hilchos Chovel, Perek Dal, Halacha Beis, Imes Habal, if the husband died after she miscarried, Nosnim Liyorshav, we give the payment to his heirs, but Vim Nagfa Achar Misa Sabal, but if she is struck after her husband died, then she miscarried, so the halacha is that she gets it. And essentially, the way that the Rambam is understood is that essentially both the husband and the wife have monetary claims for this miscarriage, for the Dmei Vlados, but according to the Rambam, the husband gets it. Why? Because in the marital agreement, the husband gets whatever financial rights the woman, whatever the woman makes, whatever the woman earns, goes to the husband. The husband has to provide for his wife. But really, it's joint property. She has equal rights to the Dmei Vlados as he does. It just happens to be that because of their marital agreement, so he gets Masiyodeha, he gets whatever she earns, and he provides support for her. But really, the Dmei Vlados belongs to both of them. However, according to the Rush in Bava Kama, Perek Hei, Os Hei, the Rush writes that no, it's a special right that the husband gets. That the Tashlum, that the payment of the Dmei Vlados, is a special restitution, that the husband has special monetary claim to the Dmei Vlados. Rav Shaul Yisraeli and Chavos Binyamin, Perek Gimel Halacha, and Simon, in the third volume, Simon Kufches, in paragraph Tes, the Rav Shaul Yisraeli thinks that this debate between the Rambam and the Rosh may be relevant as to who has the right to the frozen embryo. According to the Rambam, both the husband and the wife have equal rights to the frozen embryo. But according to the Rosh, the husband has a special right to the Dmei Vlados if there's a miscarriage, because he has special rights to the frozen embryo. And so he would argue that perhaps in this situation, he also has the rights, special financial rights, to the Dmei Vlados. In other words, the fetus, when it's inside the mother, is the property of the husband, according to the Rush. And then certainly the frozen embryo would also be the property of the husband. So that's what Rav Shaul Yisraeli thinks. However, others disagree. Rav Zalman Nechemiah Goldberg rejects the application of this debate to our situation. He suggests that perhaps the reason why the Dmei Vlados go to the father is not because the fetus or the Vlados are property that belongs to the father. It's not because the father has a monetary claim over the Vlados. Rather, the restitution is a special halacha that if you damage the Vlados, so you owe restitution to the Vlados themselves. In other words, let's say, for example, that someone kills someone. There's a wrongful suit because someone killed a certain person. So he owes that person the money. He owes the victim the money. He can't pay the victim, so then it goes to whoever inherits from the victim. So to here, just because the father may get the Dmei Vlados, not because of the Dmei Vlados that the fetus belongs to the father, it's just that the person who harmed the woman and therefore caused the miscarriage owes restitution to the fetus, but can't pay the fetus. So the father inherits whatever the fetus owns, as it were, and therefore that's why the father gets the money. But he has no monetary claim over the Vlados, he has no monetary claim over the frozen embryos exclusively. This does not prove anything, says Rav Zalman Nechemiah Goldberg. The second approach, perhaps, a second way to perhaps understand, to perhaps solve this question of who has the rights to the frozen embryos, may relate to the question of does paternity and maternity, or do paternity and maternity begin at conception or at birth? Who is the mother when one woman contributes the egg and the other carries the baby? right? You have it, normally speaking, the mother is someone who contributes the egg, and she also carries the baby. What if one woman contributes the egg and the other woman carries the baby? So this is a major debate amongst the poskim. As an example, Rav Elyashiv was of the opinion that the woman who contributed the egg is the mother, and he says essentially that harechem shel ha'isha. This is in an article in Yeshurun, and he says the following: harechem shel ha'isha bo mitpateach u'mimenu nolar v'yotze lavir holam eino koveas hayachatz. The womb does not determine yichus, lineage. Why? Because he says yesh liros esarechem kichli chitzoni. You view the womb just as a vehicle, an external kli. Bohitpateach ha'ubar mimenu yitze, saying that you view the rechem, the womb, simply as a vehicle to hold the, eventually to hold the uber, the fetus. But it's the egg donor who's the real mother. That being said, this is a debate. As an example of someone who may disagree, Shlomo Zalman Auerbach says that he sees the evidence, he's not convinced in either direction. And therefore, he thinks that maybe it's the woman who carries the baby. He's not sure, and he thinks that, as a conclusion, he thinks that whenever that we should be stringent on either side of the machlokes. So, for example, according to Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, if either the egg donor is non-Jewish, and the woman who carries the baby is Jewish, or vice versa, the child should undergo gerus, conversion, misafek, out of doubt, as a gerus lechumra. But perhaps we can argue that if you believe that that when it comes to the mother, it's the woman who carries the baby that's the mother, then you would have a situation where, if you're asking who owns the frozen embryo, well, the father obviously has a right to the frozen embryo because he contributed the zera, he contributed the sperm. But in terms of the mother, if the mother is the one who carries the baby, so in a frozen embryo, there's no mother, there's only a father. And so therefore, you might argue that the father has all the rights to the frozen embryo. However, Rav Zalman Nechemya Goldberg disagrees, and Rav Zalman Nechemya Goldberg says that this debate on who is the mother is not necessarily related to the question of who owns the frozen embryo. They're two separate questions. Especially if let's take the view, if you believe that the one who is the mother is the birth mother, so presumably you're taking the position is that the one who carries the child, the fetus, is the real mother. So presumably then, until someone carries the fetus, so then it's perhaps the frozen embryo simply property. In other words, the question of who's the mother, who's the father, may not necessarily relate to who owns these materials. So you could argue that when the baby's born, so the father is the one who contributed the zera, the sperm, the mother is the one who carried the baby, whatever the case is. But that's a separate question of, you have a frozen embryo that's not implanted in a woman, maybe that's simply a question of property. Who to whom does this belong? And this question of the frozen embryo, so maybe as a property, it's jointly owned by the person who gave the zera and the person who gave the egg. It's not necessarily related to the question of who's the mother, who's the father. So Zalman Nechemya Goldberg thinks that this machlokes is not necessarily relevant. Perhaps there's also a third way of understanding or approaching this question. Maybe we should treat this case as a partnership. The Gemara quotes Rava, who discusses two people who enter into a business partnership. And one of them wanted to split the partnership and the other did not. And Rava said that the one who doesn't want to split has the upper hand. In other words, and this actually is cited in the Shulchan Aruch, Choshen Mishpat, Siman Kuf Ayin Vav, Seif Tezvav, Hashutrim Shehisnu Beinehem Sheyamdu B'Shutva Zman Katsuv, Kol Echon Mehem Akiv Al Chaveiro Veino Yochol Lachlok Ad Sheyagi Hazman O Ad Sheyichal Hamamon. Shulchan Aruch Paskin, the Shulchan Aruch rules that partners who agreed amongst themselves that they will enter into a partnership for a designated amount of time, either side has the right to stop the other side from entering the partnership. If the two of us agree that we're going to be in this partnership for 10 years, and then all of a sudden one party says after 5 years, I want out. The other side says no. The contract says that we are going to be partners for 10 years. Therefore, perhaps we can argue that in a case where a couple agrees and they enter into a partnership and they agree to produce an embryo in partnership, they cannot, and they agree that this embryo will be implanted, they sign an agreement, perhaps they cannot end the partnership until it's completed, which is when the embryo is implanted. But the truth is, it's not so simple. You might be able to argue that since the partnership was created while the couple was married, and now, since the marriage is over, maybe the partnership should automatically be canceled. In other words, if a couple agrees to implant a frozen embryo into a third party, perhaps, even though it's not explicit, maybe implied in that agreement is that they're only going to do this if they are married, but once they are not married, they're no longer married, then essentially this agreement becomes void. Rav David Lau, in an article that he wrote about this, notes that there's another halacha on the Shulchan Aruch, in Choshen Mishpat Kuf Ayin Vav, this is Siman Saif Yotes. And he writes that, Echad me'ashutvim o me'amis'askim shemeis batla hashutvus o ha'esek. Let's say two partners enter into a partnership, and it's supposed to last for 10 years. And then 5 years later, one of the partners dies. We don't say that the partner now is still involved in a partnership with, let's say, the deceased partner's yorshim, inheritors. That if two individuals enter into a partnership, and one of them dies, the partnership is canceled. Rabbi Lau suggests that an end of marriage is comparable in that there is significant change of circumstances. And in fact, Rav Shol Yisraeli in Chavos Binyamin, Zimon Kufches, suggests as well, he compares the partnership agreement to an employer-employee relationship, which allows for one to back out in cases of unexpected circumstances. And this case would be a situation of an unexpected circumstance where it's true they agreed that they would implant the frozen embryo, but the assumption was that they would be married at the time and not that they would be divorced. And, you know, Rabbi Jachter has an article on this topic in one of his volumes of Gray Matter, and he discusses a case in Israel, I believe from 2002, and he suggests that the mainstream view is that there is no obligation to provide either the man or the woman with a child if there's a divorce. In other words, even if both parties agreed to have this frozen embryo implanted in a woman, if the couple gets divorced, then both sides have to agree to implant this frozen embryo, and if not, either side can refuse this. Because you have no right to, because the property is jointly, this frozen embryo is a property that's jointly owned by the egg donor and the sperm donor. There is an interesting position by a Rav Dichovsky that he cites. And this is a minority view, that Rav Dichovsky was of the opinion that you have no right to that in fact he would say that you have no right to destroy this frozen embryo, and he says that no, we should allow that this frozen embryo be implanted in someone in order to create a child, because he says that, in my opinion, also from a moral perspective, we do not enjoy the right to destroy a kernel of life for whatever reason. And what's fascinating about this position is that it seems that until now, essentially, most poskim assume that a frozen embryo is property. It's either the husband's property, or it's the wife's property, or the man's property, or the woman's property, or both of their property. But Rav Duchovsky is suggesting that maybe it's neither. Maybe it's the frozen embryo in some respect is some semblance of life even before it's implanted in a woman. Again, this is a minority view. This is generally rejected. But this is a fascinating position by Rav Duchovsky. And essentially, we'll find out what the Connecticut Supreme Court justice decides in a number of months. But again, according to halacha, the mainstream view does suggest that even if both parties agree, if both parties agree to implant the frozen embryo, nevertheless, either side might be able to back out if there's an unusual circumstance such as a divorce.